This show is about spoilers and discussion. It's also about spooky things that are best enjoyed after you see the movie. So any movie we talk about, we recommend you go see. You've been warned.
All right, you primitive screwheads, listen up.
What an excellent day for an exorcism.
Horror. There is no shortage of monsters to haunt our dreams.
Horror. You got red on you.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Horror.
Alive. It's alive.
Groovy.
Hi and welcome to Oh the Horror, a horror podcast where we talk about modern and classic horror films from an expert and a new, I guess a newbie's perspective.
Yeah, you can say that. I'm Steve Allman.
And I'm Rob Holmes. Well, we're going to talk franchise today.
All right.
And the franchise that we're going to talk about is the Rec franchise. It's a Spanish horror film franchise that started in 2007 and wrapped up in 2014.
You actually may recognize it from the American remake known as
Quarantine.
Quarantine, yes.
Followed by the weird Quarantine 2 that was straight to video and had nothing really to do with the rest of the series.
Well, we're going to be talking, we're going to have attitudes a lot like that.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have absolutely. So, the reason that I chose this series for us to talk about today was I remember back in 2007, I ended up watching Rec for the first time, was completely blown away.
It came over to the States with a theatrical release, right?
Rec, if it did, it was very limited, which is why Quarantine was made like right around the same time.
Yeah.
Rec, I was able to finally see it and just blew me away completely. It definitely revitalized the found footage genre.
And this kind of was in the resurgence of indie horror.
Again, yeah. I mean, like, it happens every couple of years. They try to, you know, bring stuff back. But this one definitely was a good reinvention of the genre. At least that's what I was, you know, that's the way I thought about it. As it progressed throughout as a series, though, there are ups and there are downs.
It lost its way, I will say.
Yeah, easily, big time, you could big say. Time.
But in the sort of indie found footage genre, this really stands out.
Yeah,
the early 2000s.
So the first two Rec films are directed by Jaume Balagueiro and Paco Plaza. The third one is directed just by Paco Plaza, and the fourth one, Apocalypse, is directed by Jaume again,
right.
Just by himself.
So they are a directing duo that's since split up to do the last two films in the series.
Yeah.
An interesting take. I'll say.
I think it's kind of like the Jean-Pierre Jeunet, Marc Caro thing. When they were together directing like Delicatessen and City of Lost Children, it was awesome. And then the second that they split off to kind of do their own thing, they had their ups and they had their downs. You know, there was definitely.
I'm always fascinated by, because you would think that like two great filmmakers that work good films together could just as easily make one by themselves, and it's a weird creative process where like you need that other person to bounce off of.
Well, it's a system of checks and balances a lot of the time with some of these directors, and in this case, definitely. Holy crap. So Rec, I love this movie. It's all about Angela Vidal, a reporter. She has like this nightly kind of like news segment show. Seeing about what people are doing while everyone else is asleep. You know?
It's the fluffy sort of like late night news piece that
right,
you might have.
Right.
Like
it's
a feature.
She's out visiting the fire department in Barcelona and going through just, you know, their nightly stuff with them and, you know, having her rapport with her cameraman. And it's, you know, it's kind of cool. You get to know her as a character a bit, and you get to know like why she's out there and doing this. Yeah. And you get to kind of see the perspective of the fireman. And they get called out to a like an apartment complex, and they go up there. Apparently, the police are already there. A woman in her apartment, kind of went crazy and is, you know, attacking. So she ends up. They go upstairs, and Angela and her camera crew are filming the entire time. Which
right. Yeah.
Probably shouldn't be doing. Everyone's
you really
kind of
probably
downstairs.
Shouldn't because that's a lot of forms to fill out.
Right.
I'm guessing.
And basically, the second they're in there. I think, aren't they quarantined? They're, like, quarantined right away. Like,
They have an encounter with a sick woman.
So, the woman upstairs they have the encounter with, she ends up attacking the chief of police or the policeman who's there.
Yeah.
And he's bleeding out from his neck. She's going crazy. They had to put her down, but... Or no, I don't think they put her down.
They don't put
her
down.
Yeah, they got her out. They got her out from there.
They get the police chief out.
They get the police chief out.
For some reason, the woman is still there.
The fireman is up there. Firemen are up there with her, so at least one is. They try to take her downstairs, and they're quarantined. They can't get out. All of a sudden, like, plastic is being dropped down. They're locked in the building, and they're being told that basically, like, the CDC is there.
Right.
And are not going to let them out because there's some sort of problem. So they're just like, this guy's bleeding out. Like, he's bleeding out. They're freaking out. And all of a sudden, a body just, like, falls, splatters on the ground from the stairway.
Now, you illustrate a great point right off the bat that is pretty much going to be echoed throughout this and probably Rec 2. It has an excellent pace.
Lightning fast pace,
but also a brisk one that you can follow.
Yeah. It's not edited together like a Michael Bay film. But it's definitely fast-paced,
and
more on the line of, like, let's say Evil Dead 2.
Exactly, but here's the thing. It being a found footage movie, it warrants a lot of... that type of filmmaking alone can warrant a lot of, like, clever editing tricks, where,
right.
you know, somebody's holding a camera, something happens to the camera, they pull it back on, and it works. But it doesn't seem to want to relinquish that. It has, like, a sort of consistent, continuous shot thing going mm-hmm. on for most of the movie. And it's rather impressive the way that you can try to find, okay, when did they cut here?
Right.
And that sequence you just described of them getting into the apartment, going upstairs,
yeah.
finding the woman, having the encounter with the woman, coming back down, body falling on the ground, seemingly almost one shot, at least as far as, like, plot-wise is concerned.
Right.
Like, there are no act breaks, you could say, or scene breaks in that one entire...
editing points are any time that you're going past a...
Yeah. When there's a wipe
like
across
a wall
the screen.
Or something like that.
Yeah,
or
that makes sense.
So, with that, you know, being said, like, that this movie is... there's a lot going on at all times. It's a ton of stuff. So when this body falls down, you're just like, holy shit, what the hell is going to happen next? And then... You know, you find out these people are infected with something, and it starts passing through people. If you get bit, if you get scratched, you are going to turn. You're going to become one of these things, and you're going to start attacking. And sometimes it happens very quickly. Sometimes it doesn't take, or it takes longer.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, throughout this film, what we uncover is that there was a sick dog, and the dog ended up getting this little girl sick, and then the little girl ended up getting other people sick, or the dog got people sick, and then it's passed through that way. So this virus,
so
whatever,
some kind
it
of
is,
like, crazy pathogen is making people crazy.
It's making them insane. So right away we think zombie film. Mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of how it's going into it. As you're watching it, you do see a lot of, like, weird religious stuff that's going on in the film as well. Especially when they get upstairs into the top floor that they were told, you know, has been locked off for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this girl who's been missing for a while, and they keep talking about this missing girl who disappeared years mm-hmm. ago or something. And then what we find out is that, you know, they get up to the top. This girl has been up there forever. She's blind or something, and she's deformed.
Right, yeah.
They have to see her in night vision.
It makes for an interesting set, because I was constantly reminded, and forgive me for the analogy, but it reminded me a bit of The Raid in a weird way, only in setting, because
yeah.
like, as they kind of escalate and go through the rest of this apartment complex, they find more and more things.
Right.
And that escalate the plot more. And I love this sort of entrapment that they mm-hmm. had. Like, obviously the quarantine section of this, like, is the plot device to keep
sure,
them there.
Yeah.
But I actually really, really like the idea of them being isolated, and it keeps going deeper and deeper
mm-hmm.
into this apartment building that seemingly everybody... And it's almost like a whodunit, because you keep asking these questions from the people that live there
right.
and find out more about this setting. And it's a great sort of story device to get to know these characters as well as have them occupy a space that they're familiar with.
Right. And it's really cool. By the end of it, you know... Angela is basically the only person left, her and the cameraman. They get upstairs. They find out that the experimentations have been going on, some dealing with religious stuff, but they're not exactly sure what it is. You're seeing all this stuff on newspaper clippings and experimentations and notes from these books, and they find the girl up there, and she's, like, she looks awful.
Emaciated, basically.
Emaciated, but like stretched out at the same time. Mm-hmm. Cameraman gets attacked with a hammer and beaten to death. And then you see Angela on the floor crawling towards the camera. She gets grabbed, pulled off, end of movie. Just done. Right. And it happens so quickly. The problem with that, though, is that I don't know if it was given away in the Spanish trailer, and I think it was. But when they remade it as Quarantine, that final scene is in the trailer. So you're watching the final scene of the film in the trailer before you even see it.
Granted, you don't know it's the final scene.
Yeah, but at the same time, if you...
It kind of sucks to know if you saw it. Yeah.
Yeah, and then you're like, oh, that's it? I saw that in the trailer. I've seen the film. So that in itself is a problem. But other than that, it's a great movie. I had a great time with it. You know, if I had never seen the trailer and kind of got thrown into it, it would have totally blown me away.
It's very inventive with its scares. I like the religious vibe going on with it. Like, all of the victims seem like... They don't look typical, like your atypical type of like biohazard victim.
Right, right. Like it
looks fun.
They got the crazy eyes and everything, and they're raged out. So you're thinking zombie right away. And that's kind of, by the end of the first movie, you're thinking zombie, maybe something else, but that's it.
And then it dabs into the occult. And then we're off to the races with...
Wreck 2 comes out in 2009. It takes place 15 minutes after the first movie.
Right. Like, again, right off the bat.
Right off the bat, we get thrown in. It's the SWAT team now going in to find out what happened.
Mm-hmm.
What I love this one because they've taken the idea of the camera and the found footage and upped the ante by having each member of the SWAT team have helmet cams or body cams
as well.
So you're watching from their point of view throughout. So as each one gets picked off, you're losing their feed and you're going to somebody else's.
That's another great inventive device of found footage, where the way that you place cameras is a great way to actually illustrate like a sort of cinematography, where if two cops are talking to each other, they just cut between the two body cams,
and then
you have a shot, reverse shot, sort of thing. And I kind of like the cleverness that it takes with that, because you see that in other found footage movies like Chronicle. Like, by the end of that movie, there are cameras everywhere for certain reasons, and it basically turns into a movie because of that.
Movie
like Wreck 2 utilizes cameras in a very smart way to make it more dynamic as opposed to a single camera.
No, I agree on that. I think it's the way that they do it is really awesome, just in the fact that you get each person's point of view, but then there's also a secondary group of people who you find out about later, which are the kids. So there's kids that are up on this building along with this SWAT team who have just been up kind of like lighting off fireworks and dicking around.
Right.
And then they want to find out what's going on. So they get pulled into the chaos as well. So they have all their stuff going on with like following. They want to go into the building. So they kind of want to like follow down in the sewers. And it's the three of them. And at first they don't want to go, but then the other ones go. But then these two stories start overlapping and tying into each other as you're watching the movie. In the beginning of the movie, you see this guy gets shot, and I guess it was the guy who had the meds from the first movie, whose daughter was sick, and he was supposed to go out and get the medication, so now he's being brought back into it. He ends up getting killed, and then you see this other group of people when the SWAT team looks down, and it's the kids and this other fireman coming up there. Then you get their story later on throughout the film, so you get to see like what's going on in different areas, and then kind of catch up to them. Like, if you've ever played Resident Evil 2, and you have Leon's story, and then you have Claire's story, so if you play Disc 1, but then you switch Disc 2 back into Disc 1.
They're intertwined,
so you get to see what happened to these people while you were playing as the other story. This movie does that with these two different groups, which is really awesome. And then, so what happens is we find out during this film that the guy who is going in with the SWAT team is a priest. He's not just like a detective or a cop or whatever. He's a priest, and this is basically a demon possession.
It's a very like auspicious reveal.
Holy shit! It's amazing
for that.
Yeah,
because he just sort of leaps into action.
Because you think bullshit at first.
Right. Yeah.
You think bullshit. This guy is not. These are not demons. But then he starts chanting out some religious stuff, and the demons are stopped for a second or start speaking back in this like demonic language, and you're like, oh shit.
And then it's borderline like action film sort of stuff.
Yeah. And it gets crazy because then you're like, oh shit, okay, this movie is up the ante. You have dead characters from the first film coming back, like the one fireman who
turned
like halfway through or something. Mm-hmm. He's coming back with the axe or whatever and running after them
all possessed.
And you have all these dead characters who are now back in this film. So you've made a world out of it, even though it's, you know, two movies 2 years apart from each other. You still feel like it really does take place 15 minutes later.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I want to assess both Rec 1 and 2 a bit more right now, because what we have here is a solid 1-2 punch of a series right now.
Very.
It's a, because 1 had a rock solid concept that executed it very well, because I was kind of just enamored at how much they could get away with filmmaking wise.
Right.
I could see all of the shortcuts that they made to make this effective and still, you know, scary.
Yeah.
It's a very well made movie. Now, clearly in Rec 2, got a bit more money. They can have a little bit more room to play with.
Yeah, I mean, Rec 2 definitely, it ups the ante on the story. We finally figure out it's demonic possession. Angela Vidal comes back out of fucking nowhere.
Right.
And you're like, holy shit, there has to be something going on. She can't just be alive and everything's cool. Mm-hmm. So they go back upstairs. This is when we get into the weird shit where there's stuff that you can't see in this world, where mm-hmm. the lights have to be off and they have to do some sort of, was it a ritual or just lights off?
I think it's a sort of chant or a ritual, like just be on, like, it's on the, like the upside down, if you will, of
kind
this
of, yeah.
World.
And so you can see the light world and the dark world when the lights are off and you're looking through the night vision,
mm-hmm.
they're able to see on the camera that there's another door in there. So they were like, oh, we can't find out where this girl is, the possessed one. We'll turn this on. They find that there's a door there. They go through.
And in a very clever sort of like trick of the...
Yeah, and I'm like, oh shit, they're opening up a lot of mythos in this now. Mm-hmm. Like, this is getting like crazy.
It's got some lore here.
And so I'm waiting for the third and the fourth to blow me out of the water. So as I'm finishing up the second, I'm like, all right, this is getting awesome.
Mm-hmm. And the second then, ends like crazy good.
Huge fucking twist. Angela is the possessed one.
Right.
She ends up killing the camera, or the guy who has the camera right away, just kills them. We have a possessed kid at one point. Oh, before we even get to the final ending part,
yeah,
when those kids have the gun
good.
Are trying to kill the zombie, so the guy who they're with, who's the fireman, is holding back this possessed demon zombie, and they're holding him back, and they're telling the kid to shoot, and he shoots, and he ends up hitting the fireman in the face instead.
So good.
And they both start crying, and then shoots again, and then finally hits their target. But watching them just get totally... they just start crying because they're just like, we're done. We don't know what to do. Freaking out. That emotional moment was horrific and such a tonal change so quickly, where you're just like, oh my God, how are they going to get out of this?
And it's a real big bummer.
Then the priest ends up coming out. One of their friends does get possessed and they have to deal with that. Getting back to the ending though.
Right.
Angela Vidal turns on the guy who has the camera, shoots him with a shotgun, and then gets to the priest and is like, tell them that you're done here and we're coming out.
Yeah.
And it's like, how'd you do it? And then it cuts to, and you see the footage of Angela after she got pulled away, the woman who was possessed vomiting up this parasite into her mouth because the body was used up and she needed a new host.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a demonic parasite that's controlling all of this, and now it's an Angela Vidal, and you're like, holy shit. Like,
so it can go from person to person. Right.
And the way it's shot is so... it's like The Hidden, basically.
Yeah.
And it's like, the way it's shot is so fucking awesome in that camera angle where she has the priest and she's like smashing his head into the ground. She's like, tell them to let us out and, you know, do it now. And it's like, you know, I can kill you and make, you know, just make this easy for myself. I'm giving you an option. And he's like, no, I'm not going to do it. She fucking kills him, imitates his voice.
Yeah, and then gets...
and then is like, burn the whole place to the ground. The second she gets out, I'm infected, but this girl's your only survivor. And then looks up at the camera, ends, and I'm like, fuck yes. I can't wait for 3. I can't wait for 4. If this is how the first two are, it's going to soar to new levels. We're going to have her infecting the city. Shit's going to get crazy. She's going to
be like a bug queen or something.
Basically, yeah, like she's going to be the big bad of this demon stuff. And like, she's the one that they have to kill, or it'll hop from body to body. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be fucking great. And then, God damn it.
Rec 3
comes out.
All right, so... that comes out in 2012. Let's stop for a second and actually like let's enjoy Rec 1 and 2 for a second here before, because it's gonna hurt more for us when we talk about Rec 3 when we actually bring home how good Rec
1 and 2 is. It's gonna hurt so fucking bad.
Yeah.
Because 1 and 2 lead you towards something, and you're amped up by the time that you're done with it. You're like, shit, it was 15 minutes between 1 and 2. Will 3 be 15 minutes after that? Will basically all four films take place over one night?
Again,
like, that would be amazing.
Because pacing as well. It has this trajectory of the immediacy of the event.
Yeah.
And like it works perfectly for found footage. It works perfectly for the type of setting that it's in. It has all of these things going for it. And then right when 3 comes out, it strips everything that it had going for it away.
Everything. It's like they pulled the rug out from under you and then just fucking laugh at your misfortune.
So, also this film directed by the... by half of the directing duo.
So this is when the duo split up and went to do each of their own films to finish out the series. So this was Paco Plaza's Rec 3 Genesis, which takes place at a wedding. Has nothing to do really with the house so much, except that one of the characters was bitten by the dog that was infected from the first film.
Yes.
So you're like, okay, well, that's how this virus is going to spread on this. Well, we're introduced to this couple, and it seems like it's their wedding video.
Yeah,
it seems all right. Okay, they love each other. Great. We get a montage of all of that, and then all of a sudden we're at a wedding. I'm like, okay, cool. We're just going to follow a wedding then, and I guess it's all going to tie together on how this stuff happened.
Sure, yeah. We don't really have any... Like, there's no sense of where or when we are.
No, but then you find out that a guy was bitten in the hand, and the uncle of the groom, I think, was bitten in the hand.
It's really tough to pay attention to a movie this boring.
Yeah, and this couple's really in love. That's basically one of the main things, is that this couple really loves each other.
Yeah.
And they'll talk about this repeatedly in the film. So it turns out he's infected, and all of a sudden at their reception, everyone starts getting infected. People just run out infected, and you're like, how did they all get infected? Was it when he was hugging them? It's immediate. Did he kiss people or something? So in the first 20 minutes, you're introduced to this, and everyone gets infected at this wedding reception. That's the first 20 minutes of the movie. The husband now... And a couple of characters, like a guy who keeps talking about cinema verite, and...
God.
Anyway, because there's two cameras.
Right, yeah.
And he's the one who's the real filmmaker. There's this kid who's at the wedding and just has his own camera and is just filming stuff on the side. They kind of form this little bond, and he keeps talking about cinema verite. Well, then they end up in the kitchen, and the new husband is like, why are you filming this? Knocks the camera out of his hand and kicks it. And then you see the light go off, like the recording light, like one pops up, like how it would go, and it says Rec 3 Genesis.
And this was like how long?
20 minutes into an 80 minute film. This is where they pull out the rug from under you.
And this is the title card. We get the title card 20 minutes in.
We get the title card 20 minutes in, kind of like how they did with the Friday the 13th remake, which was the same year as this too. Or no. 3 years earlier than this. Rec 2. 3 years earlier, so it's kind of like, you guys should have learned, don't do 20-minute title card. No, it's like
two
separate...
You won't earn it. You'll never feel like it's earned.
It never works. So they do this with the 20-minute title card, and then all of a sudden they're filming it like a regular fucking movie. It's out of POV. POV is gone. The whole concept behind
of
record...
found footage and...
It's called record.
Yeah.
The whole concept is now gone. It's been thrown out the fucking window. We're left now with a traditional zombie film, because the demon element's still there, and they do have the demon element with it, but it doesn't seem like a demon film.
Not even did they... Because if they wanted to change it up in a weird cinematic way, and it felt more or less... earned,
stylistically
or earned, maybe like if it was like for some reason the camera like pulled out of the camera, I don't know, but that could have been done better. How you do it, I don't know, but the biggest sin to me that this movie commits is the fact that it adds nothing to what the two films that came before it brought to the
table.
If anything, it just adds more confusion or tells us everything that we already know, or less.
It's a It's a horror romance with comedy elements in it, but none of it really works together. There's moments where you're like, oh, I see where this film is going. The beginning, the poster has the main character with a chainsaw on it.
Yeah, yeah, the bride.
She's supposed to be the badass heroine of the film. Well, she gets the chainsaw, uses it a few times, but is mainly running in a tunnel for a good 10 or 15
afraid,
minutes.
Really, yeah.
And freaking out, trying to find her husband. Like, basically the entire time, they're just trying to find each other because they get split up at this wedding. He finds armor at one point, and you're like, oh, cool, he's going to be dressed up like a knight, he's going to have this sword.
It's going to be this weird, yeah.
She's going to be, like, the chainsaw-wielding badass, and he's going to have the sword, and they're really...
He's going to fight things akimbo.
And then
they'll
make it out alive, and everything will be cool, and I'll be like, all right, that's a nice deviation of the traditional, that's fine. None of it worked. None of it felt satisfying at all. It felt...
Even though that's exactly what happens.
It felt like a rehash of every other stuff that I've seen before. And then... The worst part about it is she gets bitten. You see the infection going through her arm, but they cut off her arm before the infection goes up. Doesn't matter. She's still infected. And so you're like, well, she's going to die. They go out together. She bites off part of his face when they make out. And I'm like, well, that was pain for no reason.
Sure.
And then they die together holding hands. And you're supposed to be like, oh, it's a touching love story. Because even
but
though...
It's, but like...
It isn't. It's not a touching love story. It takes away... It's not the same... To me, it doesn't even take place in the same universe. It doesn't follow Rec 1 and 2 at fucking all.
It has borderline nothing to do with it.
No.
Like, were it not for the same method of infection, this would be a completely different movie altogether.
Yeah, because the only thing that really ties it in is when, right when you think the characters are about to get killed the first time, the priest goes over the intercom system and starts praying, and basically his prayers freeze all of the demon zombies in their place so that the characters can kind of get away except for the grandfather with the hearing aid. And that's how the bride gets bitten and infected. And this movie is a short film too, so it's like a side story, but it just doesn't work as a side story.
Yeah, and it makes no sense because theoretically it's supposed to be before this incident happens?
During?
Okay, then it makes less sense.
Because at one point on the television they talk about a quarantine taking place in this building.
Right. See, again, like, that was so hard to follow because of it.
Right.
It was.
But then I'm like, alright, well, 3 is terrible, but how are they going to tie all of it together?
So, when 3 happens, I'm like, okay, this was just a bad movie. Now, having seen 4 feels like it was mean-spirited.
4 was totally mean-spirited because,
like,
oh man, you have everything going for it, and
like, this feels like it's actively trying to fuck with you, this movie.
Yeah.
And like, to be bad. Like, to actually make it like, oh, you thought Rec 3 was bad? Here comes Rec 4.
And at times, so I watched 4, and I hadn't watched 1, 2, and 3 in a while. It had been a long time, so I was like, I'll watch 4 and see how that is, because I told myself I just didn't want to watch it.
Yeah.
Especially after 3 being as bad as it was.
And you had the same attitude about 3. You're like, eh, maybe I'll give 3 a chance. It wasn't too bad. And you're like, nah.
when I rewatched 3, the first 20 minutes had me like, you know, maybe I was being harsh on this film.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not as bad. Maybe my expectations were just too high. And then the second that the camera went away in 3 and became what it turned into, no. Yeah. I realized I was right in hating the film.
Yeah.
And really just really hating it. Not just disliking it, but being angry that this film was made and ruins the reputation of Rec 1 and 2. Mm-hmm. Not ruins it, but definitely it doesn't enhance it. Let's put it that way.
Exactly. So now Rec 4 Apocalypse happens, and boy howdy.
Rec 4 is not good. It uses found footage even less. I think maybe 2 minutes of the movie are
which
found
I don't
footage.
Know why they bailed on this concept. I don't know why both directors, because this is directed by the other half of the directing.
Balaguero, yeah. And I just, it doesn't make any sense why he would decide to go back to the Angela Vidal story, which was awesome, by the way, but now she's like on this boat, doesn't understand why she's there. And they're like, oh, we're doing research on you. And then a woman, I guess, who was at the wedding made it out alive. And that's how they tie it in, by having this woman who has dementia, I think dementia.
It's the most contrived.
It's so contrived that she's one of the people on here as well. And then you have some firefighters who are on there as well, and you're thinking that they just took random people from Barcelona.
Are we supposed to feel like the gang's all here? Is this supposed to feel like a weird reunion of these like firefighters and her and the bride?
It's literally not the bride, the grandmother of the wedding. So they're trying to tie everything together by just really pulling at random shit, being like, all right, this is how we can tie it together. And while this is happening, so you're following Angela and you're thinking, well, she's still infected. She has to still be infected and be the bad guy. But you're following her and you're like, no, she doesn't seem like it. Like, everything still seems okay with her. Like, I don't know what's going on. And then people get infected right away. And then these monkeys get infected. That CG monkey, by the way, what the fuck?
Horrible
looking. So then people start getting infected because I guess the cook makes up food and gets it and infects all
and
of
again,
it, but they never fully.
Also being wildly inconsistent with the method of the way that it should be. Like, after seeing Rec 2, I wanted to see big, like, giant, like, demonic parchment papers of, like, research that priests have done through the centuries of, like, finding out what this bug means and seeing how, like, this infection can spread and how to fight it. And
you want more lore going on. Like, is this thing in a larva state or is it fully formed? Will this grow into something else?
Yeah, I wouldn't have minded, like, a preacher with, like, a holy water super soaker more than this. Like...
Then you will love Night of the Demons Part 2.
Okay, great.
Because that happens, that literally happens in Night of the Demons Part 2.
Great.
Great film from like 1994.
I'm glad I could call it, but
wow.
Still.
That's a good one.
Because that's the thing. Like, when you see like how the way Rec 2 went down, you're like, okay, cool. So maybe there could be like a legion of these like priests that know how to deal with this
right,
infection.
Right, and you think maybe you're going to be introduced to this like... this order basically of priests who are going out there to eliminate this demon threat, going in with other teams, or maybe it spreads
Seems
out
like
and
Templar
it takes over
bullshit
yeah.
or something. Yeah.
And it could have fully taken over Barcelona at this point if they wanted to speed that far ahead, to have it where, but to put it on a ship and have them in the middle of the ocean and be like, we're going to end it on a cruise ship, but a cargo ship. That's
like,
how we're gonna end the film.
You didn't see Jason Takes Manhattan? You didn't see this shit? You didn't see
any of these films that take place like on that virus? Deep Rising is entertaining as a B movie, but is it a great movie? Not by any stretch.
Right.
It was a mistake to put it on there and keep it because they're trying to keep that bottle type thing going on.
Yeah.
Same, you know, Rec takes place in the building. Rec 2 takes place in the building. Rec 3 is isolated with the wedding.
Mm-hmm.
And Rec 4. On this cargo ship. It doesn't feel right. It doesn't work at all to me. And then getting that twist that it's been inside the guy who rescued her the entire time and not her.
We're stretching to really even say what goes down in this because not a whole lot even happens in it.
No, it's boring, man. It's a boring film. Like, the firefighters, she gets rescued by this firefighter in the beginning, I guess. You see what happens. And he gets infected with the demon parasite, and she's fine the entire movie. That's the twist that you find out. She's not the bad one. He is. It still just sucks, man.
It makes me wonder because, again, it's not like Rec 1 and 2 came out almost immediately. It came out like 2 years afterwards. So they clearly had to like rehash that idea, and make because like. In my mind, I felt like they had that trajectory for making 1 and 2 like right away.
Yeah,
and then for some reason they're like, well, I guess these are popular. Let's see what else we can do, as opposed to actually thinking it through.
Keeping the story going would have been great. I mean, they had a great story.
Yeah,
they had a trajectory of where they were going. I mean, I don't know how many times I can say how much I hate 3 and 4 because they tarnish 1 and 2 so much.
To be fair, I'm surprised at how good 2 actually was because usually sequels to horror films like this really outstay their welcome.
I know.
Really not good. But for some reason, they keep milking that until like the point of no return. But for some reason, this still works.
That's what's crazy is that 2 is so good that it's the, you know what it is? It really is like the Resident Evil games. 1 is awesome. 2, Resident Evil 2, the game is so good, it doesn't seem like it's ever going to get better. And then you get Resident Evil 3 Nemesis, and you're like, oh, yeah, I guess it doesn't get better than two.
Well, and here's the thing. I wouldn't say that one isn't as good as two. I wouldn't even say two is the best one, but it's the fact that it kind of ups that ante and still keeps that trajectory of the first one going in the exact same vein.
Yeah.
In the exact same type of, like, anybody who loved one, dynamite.
I think just make one and two one film. If you watch them back to back, it's one movie.
You'd have no recollection of,
because
like,
they're only an hour and 20 minutes a piece. That's under Titanic if you put them together. That's under a lot of almost 3 hour films. It's like that still only makes it 2 hours and 25 minutes.
You got a Marvel
film
with both of these
2 hours and
40
minutes. Yeah.
Yeah, you got a Marvel film squish these together. It's easy, but you'd think that these two guys would have the wherewithal to kind of make sense of that own idea again.
Oh,
but... and I'm still kind of scratching my head at how easily they could, like, break away from it so quickly.
Like, Four had a good tagger at the end where you see Angela and the other guy basically in the cab, and the driver's asking how their night was or whatever, and they just kind of look up, and you're like, okay, that's a fun moment. But when you see the boat blow up at the end, and you see that alien, or not the alien, but you see that demon parasite going through the water, and then the fish eats it. It looked fucking terrible.
Right.
It's like, this is awful. Why are you going with the most trite bullshit? This is how you end garbage horror films.
It's like they want... Because in a weird way, they wanted to make... they were trying to make Alien in the fourth
one. It's like they were trying to make a traditional studio horror film.
Yeah.
That had no value to it. And it's so bad, man. The fourth one is just so bad. Three and four, they serve no purpose. Three actually makes me really angry too, because you have that side character of one of the waiters who ends up going with the husband.
Right, right, right.
And they're both in armor, and you're like, this dude's going to be like the comedic relief. He's going to be awesome. Right. He's going to kill a ton of people. He gets grabbed by an arm, pulled off screen, and you never see him again.
Immediately, yeah.
And immediately just done. It almost seemed like the directors were purposely trying to make us hate their films. Like, taking stuff that we're like, oh, this will be fun, and then just being like, nah, fuck you, and just yanking everything away.
And, like, I feel like they could have done that in an even smarter way, based on how good 1 and 2 were.
Yeah.
Like,
they tried,
if you wanted
but,
to subvert and, like, kind of, like, make shitty, not so much make a shitty movie, but, like, subvert and intentionally break an audience's expectations, you can do that a lot better and still come out with a good movie.
Yeah, well, I think 2 did that because you thought it was still a zombie film, and
true.
Then you find out that they're demons, and it's a whole demon parasite thing, and that it really gets into that aspect, you're like, holy shit, twist, that changes the game for everything. It makes you want to watch the first one
but
and
now
start
it
picking
feels,
out the little pieces.
The 3 and 4 feel like a malicious self-sabotage of their own brand.
Yeah.
It's kind of fascinating because knowing that these are still the same guys that made it.
Yeah. That's
the thing. I'd understand if it was some other guys that didn't make the thing.
Then I'd be like, oh, okay, it's
like,
how Nightmare
these
guys on Elm Street.
Just don't get it. They
it's
just
like
don't
how
get
Nightmare
it.
On Elm Street or Friday the 13th. Occasionally, there's a director who doesn't get the franchise, and they
just
fuck
doesn't
up and
work.
Make some shitty sequels. That's fine. Yeah, exactly. I get that. These were the creators, man. They should have had this shit down. And the worst part is, you can see why. It's because they split. If they had stayed together for 3 and 4, I'm sure it would have turned out a lot better because of how they were together for 1 and 2.
I
want to believe, man.
To think that those guys weren't at all in the room together during any of those other sequels, it still kind of boggles the mind, which is weird because I really, really liked 1 and 2.
I know. 1 and 2 are great, and it leads you towards... You're on a path for something amazing. And that's why I waited, you know, it was 2007, 2009, so you wait 3 years until Genesis, that comes out, and you're just like, what the hell? Thinking, all right, well, maybe this is a misstep, maybe 4 will get everything back to where it's supposed to be, and then, nope.
I mean, just a boring letdown. I would just want to pack it in after that. It's a real shame. It's an absolute shame.
But franchise is done now.
It certainly is. Anything can we speak to what became of the Quarantine franchise?
Quarantine did 1 and 2, so 2 was straight to video, and it took place on a plane, as I'd mentioned.
Right.
I don't really know anything about it. I don't know if it got into the demon possession thing or was straight up a zombie film.
I'd never even seen the first
It seems quarantine. Like it was more of a Contagion type...
That's a bummer.
...type zombie horror. Mm-hmm. But that's fine. It's its own thing. At least it didn't get played out in the U.S. like it got played out in Spain.
I find like that I like the occult more than I do bio-infections.
Yeah, I think when it deals with the occult, bioinfections, like, all right, unless there's an antidote, which they're looking for in Apocalypse, which doesn't make any sense. They're like, we're going to find an antidote to the demon plague, and
how
it's like...
How do you find an antidote to a demon?
I'm like, you know, you can probably find some religious texts that can help you out with that.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's something that'll tell you what to do.
You can't really, like, forge a sort of super serum to get you out of it. No.
And I'm sure there's some real, like, actual herbal elements that could be used that you probably just haven't thought of. They're coming up with weird chemical shit. And it's like, why? You're talking about something ancient. And if something is that ancient, usually if something exists, there has to be a counterbalance to it or some sort of antivirus that could be forged from something that already exists in nature. Mm-hmm. You would think, right? If it's religious and it does play into that, it wouldn't just be like, this can't be fixed ever.
Or
because then the world would have ended already. You know, the world would have already come to an end.
Right. Exactly. So, and then like, if we're on the brink of finding the, I'm like, no, mm-hmm. you're not.
No, and that part just blew my mind. That okay, you're gonna do this on a cargo ship, and that's where this is all taking place. Like, research lab would have been a better idea, like an underground research facility. At least you get back to a closed quarters type thing without mm-hmm. having to deal
entrapment,
with
entrapment. More, yeah, so. I don't know.
And going on the ship is just. No,
I wanted this to end like League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. Just like have like all like she joins the crew of priests as like those, like the chosen one fight. Yeah. I don't know. That could have been way more fun. Because in my head,
if it's gonna be shitty, yeah, go out.
Go into that.
Just,
you know,
go full garbage and just make it schlocky and fun. Yeah,
Indiana Jones shit. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, hell, I would have dealt with another Kingdom of the Crystal Skull before I would deal with 3 and 4 again.
At least you
would
have gotten better CG. Maybe not
much
better.
No, it still would be... It would be probably on par as the same.
You'd have Cate Blanchett, though. That's what you'd have.
1 and 2. So, for anybody out there who... I know some people who love Rec 3 because it's different and it's a diversion for them. Rec 3 on its own... If Rec 3 were not a continuation of
the
Rec genre, if Rec 3 were just its own film and called something else like Genesis or whatever, it would be a good movie. Well, not a good movie, but it would be an alright film.
Mm-hmm.
It would be okay. By the time you get to 3 on its own could be a good film if it were its own thing. It would be a forgettable horror film, but it would exist and you go, oh, okay, that was okay. The fourth one, you can't really save it. There's no way...
Because it's all based on pretext.
Yeah, because it all relates to the other films.
Yeah.
But taking away that found footage aspect was what made it so good and made it feel so personal, and finding those cool camera angles and being able to be really, really creative. And I feel like the creativity is stifled the second you take away that found footage aspect.
I feel like I could have almost forgiven it if it had in some way continued the mythos or the sort of... ideas that 1 and 2 brought forward,
mm-hmm.
and it didn't do that, and that's why I'm more disappointed. It's because it dropped the ball with its own idea.
Right.
If you wanted to change it up cinematically, I could have forgiven it if it did that.
Yeah.
But since it did neither, it just sucks.
Yeah.
For as a Rec sequel in the part of the canon. Again, if for some reason it just, you know, slip of the thing, whatever. Sure.
Yeah. I don't know.
Four is unsalvageable.
Yeah, and I hate to say it, and I don't really like remakes very often, but if any series were going to either be remade or
rekindled,
I would say either remake the Rec series or, which would be even better, don't remake 1 and 2.
Remake 3 and 4.
Just get rid of 3 and 4 and make a proper 3 and 4.
Uh-huh. Make a sort of continuation on that, or like it could be you could almost do like a 10 Cloverfield Lane with it, where it's something really off the beaten path of it, and then it just veers really hard
but also changes the entire franchise completely based on how it its second act.
Exactly. And you wouldn't even know that that's part of the Cloverfield franchise until like the very end of that
and then movie. You're like, oh shit, And that's the same thing to do with the Wreck series. And you could call it, I mean, the fact that Wreck 3 is called Genesis and 4 is Apocalypse, then you can kind of just throw those out of the way and just call it Wreck 3 or whatever. They've done that in Japan with the Ring series because there's been so many of them.
It's kind of amazing there's how like many multiple, of those have been.
There's like Ring 3, but like three the Ring 3s because there's different versions. Some are the real one and some's like not, one of them's like not
which,
a real.
Which I almost kind of respect because of how weird that cinematic universe can be.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Which, yeah, then that's, and that's kind of weird because I kind of wish that it could have gone in more bold and interesting directions, and it did not. But yeah, that's where it leaves us.
Yeah. So for everyone out there, we hope you've all seen this series. We don't know if you
or
agree with us
seen
or
the good parts.
Or disagree with us. You guys might think that Wreck 3 is awesome, and that's cool. You might think Wreck 4 is awesome. I ask why, but hey, that's cool as well.
Join the conversation.
Yeah,
as
personally for me, 1 and 2, that's where it's at. 3 and 4, I would just like to forget and hope that, you know, if the directors do decide to continue this in one way or another, that they get back together, realize what made 1 and 2 great, and, you know, grace us with a proper part 3.
Absolutely. That's more, that's literally anything that I would want because it has such good things going
so much potential, man.
All right. Well, that is going to do it for us at Oh the Horror this week. Thank you guys so much for listening again, and we'll see you next time. I've been Steve Allman.
And I'm Rob Holmes.
Thanks again, everybody.
Horror. Look at me, Damien. It's all for you.
Horror. Come, it is time to keep your appointment with the Wicker Man.
Horror. When there's no more room in hell, the dead